Hello, and thank you for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst at the ISF, and this podcast is one of a series we're doing on Threat Horizon. Seems to be a perennial subject for these podcasts. But we're taking a bit of time to talk about that report because this edition has changed quite a lot. If you're leafing through it for the first time, it was launched at the end of last month, then you'll notice that it is quite different. We want to explain some of the changes we've made to it, why we've gone through that process, and what's going to happen in the future for it. And to help discuss these topics, I'm joined by three veterans of Threat Horizon. I'm a veteran of Threat Horizon myself, but also here is Richard Absalom, one of our principal analysts at the ISF, who's been involved with the report for years. Richard, haven't you? Really?
Hi, Mark. Yeah, I've been here 7 years, and I've got somewhat Stockholm syndrome around Threat Horizon, so I kind of authored it in the first 2 years.
You're hostage to its fortunes.
Yeah, and I've been on the quality kind of circle, kind of part of the quality assurance team every year since I wrote it. So yeah, I keep trying to get away, and then you guys keep dragging me back in.
Pulling me back in. Are you sick to death of it yet, or has it changed quite a lot? And
it's an interesting one every year, and I'm really excited about the stuff we've done this year. So yeah, I'm definitely not sick of it this year. So happy to talk about it and hear what members have to think.
Excellent. And also here are Lee Munson and Max Brook, authors of the current edition, who seem to have come through the experience largely unscathed. Hello, Lee, and hello, Max.
Hello, Mark. I'm actually not a veteran of Threat Horizon, this being my first.
Yeah, hi, Mark. I think Threat Horizon 2024 is the greenhorn of the team, and managed to join at the latter end of the stages of that. So similar-ish to Lee, have the reins for the first time as an author on Threat Horizon 2025.
Yeah, to be honest, it was probably better that novices went through this process, because I think any of us who were offered that chance would go, no, we just step back. Yeah, but was it a good experience for you guys for getting through it? Because I know, Lee, you've come from a sort of a background where you did a lot of threat modelling, and you were looking at, I guess, at immediate threats and a bit further out. But was it a very different, good experience for you?
Was it different? Absolutely, very different. Was it good? It was fantastic. I've learned so much. And it's opened my mind to so many different possibilities and the way of looking at future threats as well.
Okay, well, that's good. Same for you, Max. Yeah, you had a good time with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm very much still in that aftershock phase of launching any report where you're not quite sure which way is up or down. But actually, yeah, just thinking about how we took it from an initial idea and that conception about what we wanted to do and the changes we wanted to make, and seeing that all the way through to launching the report, it's been an experience, and one definitely to look back on favorably.
Yeah, well, let's start with that. Let's just look back on those experiences, because I think, Richard, you oversaw the sort of last reformatting, restructuring of it, and then I did the last of that old edition version, I suppose you could call it, and then Lee and Max ushered in that new the new version. I kind of feel this should be a handover, some kind of ceremony, but I'm not sure what we would hand over. But yeah, Richard, for you, I don't know, is it, quickly chat about, because it's the flagship report for the ISF, so it needs quite broad shoulders, I guess. There's a particular job it has to do.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, we were aiming for continuity in terms of the purpose. So the purpose of Threat Horizon has always been, let's think about the future a bit further out than the year ahead. At the beginning of the year, you always see multiple research houses coming out saying, these are the cyber threats you're going to face this year, blah, 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 trends for this year. We've always tried to go 2 or 3 years ahead, think a bit outside the box, and kind of prod people to think, okay, something about things they haven't thought of. And especially in the security environment, most of the people we talk with are very busy firefighting very real problems every day, that don't have the headspace necessarily to get out and think, what am I going to be firefighting in 3 years' time? And that's the kind of privileged position we're in as researchers, is to step back, think a bit, talk to a lot of different people inside and outside the ISF, inside and outside the industry in general, and kind of get that future-looking view of what does the world look like. So, and then we really want to get people thinking about their strategy. So how do you actually start to deal with the future and start planning, putting those building blocks in place to prepare, think about the controls you need, the kind of education programs, the collaboration you can go through with other parts of the business. None of that changes really in terms of a new format. That's still the goal. We just think the way, and we're going to talk about hopefully what that looks like, but the way we're doing it now, I think relies less on an absolute prediction of this is something that's going to happen and you must prepare for it too, quite frankly, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. No. So here are a bunch of things. And yeah,
that was very true. That was very true of the last of the report. Sort of in the versions I oversaw and then wrote, was that used that very difficult word prediction.
Yeah,
as they say, predictions are very difficult to do, especially when you're thinking about the future. Now, I think certainly with it was, it was very frustrating to write those because there was a process, there was a point at which you had to discard some ideas that were undoubtedly important, were going to change, but they just didn't quite figure because you had nine things you honed in on and you had to explore.
Yeah, we used to throw out so many good ideas. And in fact, the keen-eyed readers and viewers may have noticed some of our reports and the threats involved, you know, almost two, you know, conflicting ideas. There was one about drones a couple of years ago. It's like, well, drones could be used as defenders, but also as attackers, for instance. And yeah, we were realizing we could do a lot more with the research that we were doing anyway, and a lot more around the kind of bigger picture thinking on PESL, like political, economic, social, you know, technological, legal, environmental factors. We could really kind of drive more.
Yeah, I think as well, just to think about the job Threat Horizon does for the ISF and, you know, practitioners as well, just that it does, it had to do different things at different times. And I think when we reformatted it before this time, it did fulfill the role it was being asked to do very well, because it did, you know, it did give people that glimpse forward. So there were some technologies it highlighted, and we had a pretty good track record of spotting the things that were going to be causing problems and helping people prepare. But, you know, to bring in Max and Lee, just I think, you know, now it's trying to do a different kind of job, because information security is a different kind of job. So is that sort of what drove it as well? Just try and get that, serve the industry better and serve our practitioners better and members, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. I think, as you touched on then, Mark, really what it's been really been forced by two major things. So I think it's reflective of how information security and just security as a profession is changing, and how it's become much more of a unit tied to the operations of the business and sort of the prosperity in that sense, but also just in terms of how the world's changing as well. Then maybe it's something too naive to think it's always getting faster and quicker, but it really does seem that way. And actually, when we're starting to put our stake in the ground 3 years ahead with predictions, the reality is that they're just, everything is changing at such a, you know, faster, quicker pace. And whether that means it's happening as we're starting to launch and release, or it's within 1 year time frame. So just having a bit more, probably what you call flexibility, or being pragmatic with how we look at the future, is, you know, a big driver of that change as well.
Yeah, and I suppose we should dive into what is the bigger change, and that's building those scenarios, which is trying to imagine plausible futures for the world along a variety of themes. And that's what we present, that's what we explore, and out of that we get our actions. Is that broadly correct? That's the sort of lead, I don't know, have I got that conception right in terms of how we're presenting the information?
Yeah, so you're absolutely spot on. I mean, as has already been covered, predictions, they've always been tricky. And we're finding they're getting harder and harder now. So instead, we're sort of painting a picture of a world that could go off in sort of four fairly distinct directions, because we don't know which one will actually come to pass. And it gives members an opportunity to look at all four of those scenarios and our thinking behind them and apply them to their own organisation.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest changes, as Lee used the word then, is that we've changed from using the word saying this will happen to saying this could happen, really, in effect, is the essence of that that shift in approach and mentality, really, is we don't have a crystal ball and we can't tell you what will happen, but we can use the expertise of the team, using the members and leveraging their skills and knowledge and, you know, external experts to understand how the world might look and really start to prepare for those different futures.
Yeah, I think that's right, isn't it? It's not that we're saying the world will look like this, because we don't know, the idea is that we paint a picture and then look at the consequences of that and all the other possibilities as well. Like I say, there's the four extremes of that, and boil down what that might mean into some actions. And I think that's definitely something that has changed in this edition, is that those actions for now and actions for later are much more detailed as well. So I guess, I mean, that's as well one of the broad reasons for doing this, is we're trying to make it better for members as well. We're not just doing this for the sake of it because we'd like a change, please, because we've done the same thing for a few years. We want actually other very, very good reasons for doing this.
Yeah, we always, you know, we listen to people. There's always feedback. There's always conversations. Generally, people like Threat Horizon and talk about it and find it useful. But a lot of the time, stuff we got back was, can we tell us more about how to prepare? You know, what are the bigger picture things that we can do? And there was also sometimes people would say this feels a bit too out there, or a bit too kind of, we had, you know, kind of James Bond type predictions of kind of cyber carnage. And yeah, but you know, to be honest, a lot of the time we did that because we wanted to be deliberately provocative and say, what if this really bad thing happens? You know, I think Threat Horizon 2020 in particular didn't catch the pandemic. Yes, I've heard that one many times before. But yeah, we went kind of apocalyptic deliberately. This time we can present multiple different things. Some might seem more like black swan scenarios, but we're not saying they definitely will happen, just that there is scope for them to happen. And if they do, are you prepared for it? What I find really interesting about the scenarios, to be honest, is there are some that you look at and you think that looks like a kind of utopia prediction. This is where everything's going well. But actually we found, I think, you know, the guys will talk about this in the workshops and, you know, some of the research, some of the biggest threats were happening in scenarios where actually the world looked really rosy. And this is what I found really interesting. There are quite different threats depending on the scenario. So there's really kind of polar opposite potential futures that the organizations could face, but they need to be ready for everything because, yeah, you can't tell what's going to happen. There are just so many factors involved in kind of creating that future.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's the sort of attractive part of doing it this way, is just you take more potential possible things into account. And some of them can be quite outlandish. I think, I remember, didn't you say, Lee, that one of the scenarios had sort of zombies or something like that? I can't remember. It was, but you know, not quite cyber carnage, but a different kind of carnage. Yeah. So we do consider quite out there type scenarios, I think, don't we?
I'm not sure we consider the zombies too seriously.
I was slightly frivolous, but I think it is just exploring possibles and what the consequences of that would be.
I think that it's an important point, though, because in a way, it really shows you what scenarios are about, because scenarios aren't about the story of what the scenario is and how the world may develop and whether that includes zombies or not, but it's actually about how you prepare for that and the actions that are, you know, you put in place as an organization to prepare for something like that, because the reality is that future probably won't happen, because in the same way we're looking forward and, you know, events that are beyond the control of the ISF or organizations or states and governments, you know, can always occur, like those black swans that has been mentioned, but it's about just having those underlying actions and starting to think outside the box and think in a different way that allows, you know, practitioners and different business professionals to just think differently and have that space and that, in a way, the rapport that can allow them to do that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's still value in going completely outlandish and say not quite a zombie apocalypse, but, you know, if you're looking for a massive medical event, COVID, I mean, yeah, if you were sort of a similar kind of thing, I mean, it's just, you know, thinking of the extremes helps you prepare for, you know, whatever happens.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a good example of something like that was that we'd heard from a member is that they'd effectively built scenarios and some business continuity plans around chemical spills or something like that, which required working from home. And then if you look on that, the flip side is by having the preparations and sort of the plans and procedures in place for that, allow them to transition to working from home because of a totally different reason, far easier than if they hadn't had that in place before.
Yeah, I think it is that preparation and just sort of considering what might hit you. I think that's a big part of it. So just to talk a bit about how what the report looks like, because this is in some respects a transition year from where we were to where we want to get, but the report does have some familiarities. Well, anyone who's familiar with it will, flipping through it, will see that it looks similar-ish to what we've done. We've got three themes, we have the scenarios laid out in a roughly similar kind of way, and obviously we have the sections about preparing short-term, long-term actions as well. So I mean, it's not going to be entirely unfamiliar to our members, but there's plenty of difference there as well for people to dig into. So I mean, I think that's it shouldn't be too scary for people to flip through. They should be able to find their way.
Yeah, we were looking for evolution over revolution in that sense, and in the end, you know, it's got to come back down to what are the threats in the future. And you know, this is our raison d'etre at the ISF, right? It's talking about managing risk and security threats. So yeah, absolutely, we've got a big picture, what does the world look like view, but that's all to get down to this point of these are the threats that could impact you. What I guess the difference would be is those, instead of nine threats, we've got, what was it, in the 30s, 32, something like that. Someone will have to remind me exactly, but there are a lot, you know, each scenario has at least two threats in there, and we've got 12 12 scenarios essentially kind of mapped out. So in that sense, there's a lot more, there's a greater number of things to get your teeth into from a member point of view. But yeah, we're not saying all of them will happen.
No, but we're exploring the consequences. I mean, that's the kind of other side of it as well. Absolutely. Just sort of letting people know. Because I think, I'd say this, the job Threat Horizon has to do has changed. And I think there's more of practitioners now having those broader conversations with other parts of the organisation that consider risk. And you know, going in armed with better understanding of what might happen is going to help with that.
And I think, you know, when we were looking at what can we do to improve Threat Horizon, one of the things that came up was this idea of scenario planning, and the kind of methodology we're using has been and is fairly widely used by other parts of the business, you know, kind of around risk management, enterprise risk. So the hope, you know, from our point of view at this point, is that being able to use that kind of methodology and talking that language will resonate with people across the business that you just have to work with now from a, you know, if you're a security leader or part of the security team, you can't be sitting there in your silo.
Yeah. So familiarity in a way, the same sort of conversation, same language. And even if you look at the three themes we picked this year in terms of work, data and international relations, is that, you know, translates and impacts every, you know, aspect of a business or an organization. So there's that instant sort of connection rather than going straight to there from the, you know, a specific information security threat. We can actually put the security into the context of those wider, you know, shapers and bigger trends of the future.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the difficult things about being working in information security is you have lots of people want your opinion and they all talk in very different languages or have different ways of viewing the world. And I think we're trying to give people a better sense of in the round of how they can talk about those kinds of things. But just if we can switch briefly to talk about how what the preparation involved, because it was, I guess it was roughly similar. And we talked to a lot of experts, but as well, just if Max and Lee can talk a bit about the workshops we went through, what the process there, because I guess the next step for this is might be members coming back to and saying, well, how do we do this? Can we do this for ourselves? Or yeah, so I'm curious about some of the mechanics of that.
That's the really, you know, the beneficial thing, like some members might have seen if they attended any of our chapter workshops or congress sessions, is that what sits behind a scenario sort of based methodology is actually a really easily translatable and reproduced approach, which makes it a lot clearer and transparent in terms of how we get to the end point. But yeah, you're certainly right, we engage with a lot of external experts, whether that was academic or more sort of businessy trend sort of futurist groups, but we tried to take a lot of that teachings and learnings and put them into some of the workshops. And yeah, it was definitely a learning curve for us, you know, understanding about the mechanics of this and how scenarios actually work. But what really struck us, I'm sure Lee sort of shares a similar sentiment, is that members really engage with it. And we were slightly cautious before about how well this would come across and translate about the change and the evolution, as Rich mentioned, and just having a new approach, which was a lot more engaging with the members in terms of at that bigger scale. And actually, it went down, you know, really well. There was a lot of great feedback. And yeah, it's just sort of that engagement and putting people in a space where you could sort of say, we're looking at the future, but in a way that there's no right or wrong. And just tell us about your worries, what you're thinking about, you know, whether that comes from a personal aspect or, you know, from your organizational sort of contextual view. And I think that's something we really want to build on and take forward as well, those sort of you know, chapters, workshops and congress stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, we especially saw that at Congress when we sort of finalised the three themes we were going to go for in this latest version of Threat Horizon. The amount of feedback we got from members was absolutely colossal.
Feedback in what terms? What were they giving you? Was it just consequences of some of those scenarios, those kind of things, things to think about, actions to take?
All of that, the consequences, the potential threats and impacts, and just basically an appreciation of where we were going with the scenarios themselves.
Yeah, I think that's it was one of the heartening things, because before we launched into this process, we did talk to a few super fans of Threat Horizon who make good use of the report. And I'm sure there's a lot more than relatively small number we talked to, but they were interested and keen and curious about the way what the changes we were making, and it does seem to have proved quite popular, and hopefully will be going forward as well. Just that, you know, a different way to present this information and give people a sense of, you know, what they need to prepare for and how, and that a quite creative process it involves them with as well.
Something which really opened our eyes a bit and sort of gave us that impetus to carry on was when we took this externally and tried and tested it with some just, you know, a range of business folk. And when we had like an engagement with some of the academic institutions at Oxford University, and actually that really stuck out to us because they challenged us a lot. They really made us think in a different way, and they gave us some feedback which we took on and some feedback which we just, you know, knew we couldn't really implement into the report. But actually just the mere fact that they really grasped what we were trying to do and they understood the importance of information security, and, you know, these people hadn't, you know, ever heard of the ISF. They hadn't really been engaged with information security in the way that we all have. And, you know, often you can get blinded by these ideas and when you really get your head stuck into something, but actually taking it out and just seeing how people engage with it and were excited by it was a really cool thing to see as well.
Yeah, and I think that engagement isn't going to stop, is it? I think the next stage is, because we've got quite a, because it, obviously Threat Horizon has changed, there's a different process there. There's some explanation we need to do. So I think we're going to be socializing it. This podcast is obviously part of that, but I think there's a job of work for Max and Leah over the next few weeks and months to spread the word, I guess, amongst the membership.
Certainly, yeah. And really looking to get some of that feedback as well about how members use this report, what they think is missing, what they enjoy from it, the new approach. Because, yeah, it's evolution and it's changing as well. It's a continuous process. We're not there at that end state yet. And, you know, as we look forward, it's going to be really key to having some of that and carrying on that engagement and those conversations, because it's something we desperately want to do.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it'd be interesting to sort of see, because like you say, it's in that we've got a pretty clear idea of the methodology we use for the workshops, but I think the end result, I think, could be refined and probably will be refined for the next edition. I think myself and Max are working on that, so it'll be interesting to see how it changes. I think the changes could be quite subtle, but hopefully just improve that usability as well. Just keep things rolling and keep it relevant. Thank you to everybody that's contributed today, and thank you for listening. You can now find ISF Podcasts on all major podcast platforms. If you look at the show notes for our podcasts, you'll find the page on Audioboom where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research tools and guidance.